He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning to our listeners for this week's version of Car Keys with Jay, Mike, and Robin. Somewhere along the way, they'll all speak, hopefully. One of the things I'd like to start with this morning is just a little tidbit of information about weather and people who like it and people who don't. People who don't are generally people who just don't like the cold, don't like the slop, and don't like the mess it creates for their lives, from shoveling walks and getting driveways plowed to just plain not wanting to go out and drive in it. The two industries that love bad weather are A, body shops, and B, snowplow operators. That is the ones who do the snowplowing for the private people who don't like it.
What was the first one?
Body shops, auto body shops.
Oh.
All you need to do is to see that how much they like it is to go drive by an auto body shop after a bad storm weather has passed by and see the number of cars that have piled up in the outside parking lots that have come in with various forms of body damage and whatever else they're there for. The snowplow.
I think the body shop thing is more of another around the year issue with the deer, and that brings us to another.
Well, the deer is a year round situation, but you don't see the parking lot fill up on a per day DM basis or a per storm type of weather basis. A deer situation can happen any night, and you know whether they're 10 deer hit a night or a month or whatever is not the same as having a storm come in, making the driving hazardous, and people try to go out and play in it, or not play in it, but drive in it, and their car inevitably seems to end up at a body shop repair place days after, assuming the car is still drivable before they have to actually have it towed in. But this is apropos to a recent show, not dated, that we had about safe driving in inclement weather. And no matter when this show is heard by anybody, or the other show is heard in replays, as they often are on this station, the weather is a major factor in producing unhappy results for drivers who already may have trouble driving when the conditions are perfect. So that's it, Jay. You want to chime in?
Well, yeah. You
chimed in about the deer,
but
the deer's not the deer aren't the big problem.
So
they don't cause road condition becoming unfavorable to drivers in certain climate conditions.
Well, I think it's all. First of all, there's an attitude thing, right? I mean, some people just don't like driving. Some people just don't like driving, and I happen to like driving. I think you do too, right?
Correct.
And I don't mind driving in challenging conditions, providing I'm prepared for it, providing I have the time for it. And it's all the same things that come into play whenever you take the wheel. I think in these conditions, like last night I had to do a drive, and it was the temperatures were above freezing most of the time, but once in a while they were below freezing. So you go like, okay, and the roads were dry, but they look greasy. So I always think about whether am I seeing frost on the road or whether I'm seeing salt on the road. And, you know, it's a good thing that mostly we see salt, and the state highway department and our local town departments have been salting the roads heavily. It's not good for our cars, but there's a peace of mind that comes with it, that you're pretty confident that your car you are going to stay on the road. Having said that, the roads are greasy and they are slipperier than in dry conditions. And we just came out of 2 or 3 months of extremely dry conditions and dry roads, and we just have to adapt to slipperier conditions.
Well, that's absolutely true. What happens with the greasiness situation on roads? Over time, when we have extremely dry conditions and people who race cars around racetracks know this quite well, as I learned when I did my racing, had my racing adventures back in the 80s and 90s, taking racing lessons. And that is, rubber builds up on the asphalt. And when it gets wet later on, it becomes somewhat greasy. And that can happen. You may not see it, you may not feel it driving on dry roads, but tires wear down over time. And with the number of cars that are going transgressing the highways, inevitably, that rubber compound that comes off the tires usually ends up on the asphalt. And that is one element that creates a greasiness situation the first time you get inclement weather conditions that saturate the surface of these roads. It may have a rubber compound intermixed with the asphalt topping. Back to the other thing I'm interested in with freezing conditions on road is many of you drivers will notice, as I do, I and Jay and Mike, that they put these new, I don't even know what you call them, impressions in the center lines of the many of the state roads that rattle, that
rumble
sort of make
strips.
You feel like you're going across a rumble strip.
Yep. I
think it's a very good safety situation, but what I have noticed, and including every time I drive after a rainstorm, is that these ripples or strips are filling up with water. And what I'm interested in seeing is what happens when they freeze before they dry out, and do they do any damage to the asphalt, or do they make the rumble effect that they now create quite audibly and essentially through the steering wheel system and in your car go away? Or
I don't know. You're going to have to do some testing and give
that's my own personal thing, which I will test and report on. Not that maybe many listeners are interested in that part of it, but they do create a very good audible and physically felt situation that can really be a life-saving situation. If you are a driver that might be sleepy or have otherwise taken your eyes off the road and you cross over the middle line of a road that has these rumble strips in them.
That brings me to another a safety feature that we've talked about on and off, and that's available and standard on more and more cars, is the lane assist.
Steering
and
effect.
It works pretty well in many newer cars. I mean, I was
pretty well.
That was driving,
the word "pretty" is should be emphasized because it is not fail safe. I have found, at least on the cars I've driven.
Well, nothing.
Yeah, you drive a lot more cars than I do, different ones, and you probably have you can feel whether they're working well for you when they go on. They can be a little bit disconcerting to drivers who have never felt their steering wheel being sort of manipulated in their hands as they're driving down the road. But early Audi ones were not very good in some of the Audis I drove.
Some of them are more aggressive than others.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think. Recently, I was driving a fairly recent Honda CR-V, so not the absolute current version, but I think like a 2021, 2022, and the model changed, I think, in 23. It was very effective. I actually let go of the wheel a few times to see, hey, let's see if this car is going to make the turn. And it actually makes a turn even at nighttime. Obviously, you need lines on the road for it to work. And it was not overbearing. It just seems to work pretty well. And I think those systems will get better and better. They can be deactivated. And I honestly would not recommend it. And I'm back to my beef with tech in cars, is that it gets very, very complicated. And a lot of these settings are in multiple layers of functions on your touchscreen. And obviously you have to do that when you're stopped. But it takes time, and it can be frustrating. And some of those touchscreen systems are better than others. And some of them will remind you that your features are on or off, take the time to figure them out.
I would like to interject that I as the general host of this show, do not recommend that any of our drivers try one of the adventures that Jay tried with it, which is letting it steer you around a corner without your hands on the wheel.
Well,
I'm not sure that they really are designed to do that.
My hands are very close.
And hold on, Jay. They're not designed to do that, and we do not, in this show, advocate you experimenting with it unless you are an extremely experienced driver and you know exactly what you're doing when you want to let go of the wheel and see if it'll actually take the car around a corner for you. Tesla has very good self-steering cars from that standpoint, but the lane-keeping feature, I have often found, is very uneven, even in some of the newer cars. It may be related to the how well the roads are marked with their side edge markings on the, which are in white, and the yellow marks in the front. But they are not wholeheartedly. They're good to get your hands back on the wheel. And once you get your hands on the wheel, I would not take them off until you get lazy again, which is usually when you have your hands off the wheel.
All right. So, Robin, you read a lot. What's the news of the week in the industry?
Well, it's interesting. The news of the week is, here's a headline. Dealers are anticipating the golden age with Trump. And it's surrounding the whole idea of what is going to perk up the auto sales and the dealers and probably the manufacturers as we have a new administration coming in. First of all, the electric car industry has been suffering lately and may suffer more than it has been in terms of encouraging people to go electric as opposed to stay with fossil fuel vehicles. The president-elect, who doesn't take, you know, we all know, doesn't take office until the middle of January, said in one news bit that I heard, if you're planning to come to Washington, and he gave some original start-out point, he said, you better not come in an electric car because it won't make it. I was amused at that comment from him. But if he's really going to unleash, the idea that electric cars should not be the next car you buy, that won't do the electric car manufacturers any favors.
Well, mandates don't do any favors either. That's an artificial way of putting those cars out when they're not ready for prime time. The whole infrastructure and everything isn't ready for prime time. Let people have the cars when they're ready.
Electric cars are pretty good if you don't try to rely on things like self-steering.
Yeah, but you don't force them onto people. You don't force them onto people.
Well, the current administration has been encouraging, and so have some of the states, encouraging people to buy electric with mandates that we're going to say, well, we won't allow you to sell any fossil fuel cars maybe by 2035.
Well, that's not encouragement. That's forcing.
That's correct. But,
the encouragement is tax credits. I mean, that's what gets people going.
Well, I don't want to pay for other people's cars.
The president-elect is going to encourage tax credits so much because he doesn't really care whether you have an electric car or not, as far as I can see. But that's one headline. We're just going on headlines. We don't need to talk our listeners into having to listen to us debate the specifics of it. There's another headline saying charging virus. EV drivers could be spreading defects through faulty adapters. I do not really know what they're going to be spreading defects through, but it has to do with, I don't know what it does, having adaptive charging cables in cars so that if you don't have a Tesla, you can still charge your car through a Tesla charging station. That's just another headline. It doesn't make much sense to try to discuss it because it doesn't. What is going to happen with Musk and electric vehicles if he tries to import Chinese-built Teslas into the U.S.? Will he have a special exemption or won't he? That's another headline.
We can go on and on about the speculation.
We can. There's nothing really major in the auto industry, as far as I can tell, that we should pass further along to our listeners.
Well, Volkswagen is on the brink of bankruptcy. On the bright note,
what is
Volkswagen?
Well,
on a brighter note, they are putting buttons back in dashboards. I don't know if that's going to save them, but it definitely is.
Did you see a headline about that? Because I don't think VW is anywhere near possibly going to go bankrupt.
They have big issues.
Yeah, they do, but they got Porsche in their back in their lineup too, and there's a lot of profit in the Porsche side of the pro. They're not seemingly having the problem VW currently is. But
you still need mass produced, mass market cars like Volkswagen, and Volkswagen in Europe is Volkswagen, Seat, Skoda, all the. I'm going to say sub-brands. They're not really sub-brands, but, different niches of market. Porsche and Audi are the upscale.
Well, they're the ones we hear about, but Skoda puts out a very good version of, is it the Audi? I think it is. What is that, the Spanish one, Jay?
Skoda. That. Skoda is, no, Seat is the Spanish company, and Skoda is the Slovakian company, or Czech.
Okay.
I don't even know if they're Czech or Slovakian.
We're not going to see that, so we don't need to debate it over the air, I don't think.
Skoda was a small company that manufactured rear-engine cars. In the 70s,
right.
I grew up with those all around me, and they broke down like they were all over the countryside, mm-hmm. falling apart. And Volkswagen bought them, I'm going to say, in the 90s, early 90s. And now they make good cars, and they make, cars that slot in between, like the Golf and the Passat. They have SUVs, all sold in Europe, I think, exclusively. I don't know about other parts of the world, like Africa or Asia, but they're definitely a European brand. And I happen to have one, but they're good cars. And you sit in them, and it's like sitting in an Audi or a Volkswagen.
Well, the good thing about that, from an economic standpoint, is that they usually cost. They gave you the Audi VW technology in the cars that didn't have the panache to sort of get the same price levels for the same equivalent models. And
yeah,
they actually looked better. I thought some of them were looking really great against the Audi and the VW's design just as well. But we never got it here in the U.S.
Nope, and not going to happen.
The buzzes are hitting the streets. You want to know what's going on in the auto industry on new cars showing up on the streets? The buzzes, which is a VW van.
The
dealers that I have talked to, I've only talked to two. I thought I'd like to go test drive one. I can't currently get a dealer who tells me that they have one available for test drive.
Because
all their first deliveries are pre-sold.
Are you familiar with the Motor Week online?
Yes, I certainly am. I get it on TV every week.
Okay, because
they've had a good test. It's
interesting. I just happened to see that the other night with the buzz. No, they weren't all complimentary of it.
Every car has its critical.
But then again, see, I look at it in that range again, 200 miles.
Yep. It's not enough to go from here to Chicago in one day multiple. Probably that means two in the buzzes.
When's the last charge?
They did say that it would go 80% charge in about 26 minutes, if you can believe that. That's probably,
you have
I'm
to
gonna
get
guess.
A level 3 or level 2 or level 3 charger has the output.
Exactly.
They're telling you that these new cars, and this is not a buzz exclusive, because if you go online and look at what the electric cars say they can do, a lot of the electric lines of Audi and VW now, if you have the right charger available to you, can charge up to 80% in 21 to 28 minutes, which is faster than 45 minutes and 35 minutes, whatever.
Well, why are they using 80%? Is this they don't want you to charge?
Well, the recommendation, Jay may know more about it than I do, that you do not charge your batteries fully all the time because it it saves the battery's longevity.
And it takes a long. You can.
And it takes a lot longer to go
the final
40%
to 100%. Yeah.
So when they talk about range, are they referring to this 80%, or is the range based on 100%?
No,
I
the range
think it's
is based
on
100%.
All right. Well, that's kind of deceiving
but
then.
There are tests done with like 10 to 80 or 10 to 90%, and there have been real world tests, range tests, or trip tests, if you will. Well, how long does it take? Because you don't try to necessarily use up all of your energy. Right? You can stop every couple hours and stop for 15, 20 minutes, and maybe your battery's at 40%, and you recharge it, and you're at 75%, and then and most of the manufacturers have software that enables you to really plan the trip. I know Rivian does, obviously Tesla does, and I'm sure the others have too.
And they all have charger addresses in their computer systems, upgraded probably over the air. Any electric car comes with a complete sort of catalog of the existing charging stations that it can use going forward. The other issue about now charging is are they conveniently located when you pull into a central service station or to go eat or something, so you don't have to walk a mile to get into the restaurant and get back to your car, or aren't they?
And so they, you want them
the
up
best
front, then?
Person to
so
comment on that.
I think we need to get a guest on the show who actually has driven an electric car, because we're all talking about something we're not really familiar with.
Well, distance from convenient.
We just don't know.
Certainly limited.
I've met people who've had two or three electric cars, and we should get somebody on the show who can talk about that, with personal experience. I met a person a couple of weeks ago who was on his third electric vehicle, and he was driving a Rivian pickup truck after having owned a Ford Mach-E, Mustang, and a Tesla Y. And he loved every one of his vehicles, and he was actually on a major road trip, and he had absolutely no problems at all. So I think we keep going on and on and on about the inconvenience of the electric car, but we really need to get somebody who can testify.
Well, I think this word inconvenience is certainly specific to what inconveniences is a individual driver. And you and I are probably a little different than some of the people who don't have the problem of inconvenience in their head when they are driving an electric car. It's going to lessen as the world converts to electric charging stations, and maybe fossil fuel stations don't increase in numerically, hopefully do not disappear at all.
Fossil fuel cars
are going to be around for a lot longer than I think people were thinking 5 years ago when this electric onslaught came onto the scene, and some of the states started saying, we won't let you sell a fossil fuel car after such a time. And I think that's going to be history.
It
will not be enforced anytime soon.
I think that manufacturers need to decide if they want to embrace electric vehicles or not. And the fact of the matter is they're all so far have been producing electric vehicles. Some are very good because they have been forced to. That's how we started out the show in not liking the, mandates. But the reality is Tesla still has a 50% market share, no matter how hard everybody else is trying. And there are very good alternatives to Tesla. But Tesla sells only electric cars. They drink the Kool-Aid, and they sell, they preach what they sell, and they sell what they preach. Everybody else is just like dancing between electric vehicles and fossil fuel vehicles. And until they decide to embrace it more heartedly, they're still going to be, they're fighting for, half the market. And these are big companies, GM, Hyundai, Ford, Audi, BMW, So I don't know what the solution is for them. What I can say, though, about charging stations is in the metro New York area, there's a big problem. for Tesla. A lot of cabs and Ubers are driving Teslas these days. Yep. A lot of people, a lot of those drivers live in the city. They don't have charging at home, so they rely on public charging stations. And I see lines of 15, 20, 30 Teslas waiting to get a charge.
At an airport.
Yeah, around airports. And, and so, you know, there are logistical issues, and those guys are not all very happy. But, you know, we'll see how things pan out.
Okay. Yeah, you got something to talk about that could carry us forward?
I just did. Carry us forward. Well, you know, we've talked a little bit about safety. I'm looking at a pretty cool picture of a vehicle right now. Mercedes is coming out with the G-Wagon in a electrified version of the
the
vehicle.
Yes, you're right. I saw it.
And it looks like a G-Wagon, and it does everything well. And it brings me back to high-end SUVs, electric SUVs. And I don't know what I see a lot of Rivians out there.
They are increasingly
evident. And I know we live in a privileged area of the world, but there are, you know, there are a lot of those. There are a lot of Rivians SUVs out there. So it'll be interesting to see how things evolve. I'm still looking for an R2 or an R3, 3 or 4 years down the road. Those are the smaller Rivian vehicles.
Cars and Concepts. I'm looking at Automotive News, recent edition, and they have a listing of 8 cool things that they think makes a car cool. The car they're talking about is the 2025 Volkswagen Tiguan. The Tiguan, I think, is a very interesting car. I don't know, Jay, whether you've driven one. I have, and I think they are very well designed. I like them a lot. But here are 8 things, and I don't know how many listeners will even care about any of the 8 that they've got here. Color, inspired by Porsche and Audi. This is to buy a Tiguan. Real wood is number 2. They're going to have commonplace in luxury vehicles, real wood trim. I don't know whether or not, Jay, you think about the trim in the cars you drive. 3, massaging seats. Massaging seats I don't have in any of my cars. Jay, you've driven a car with massaging seats, and I think probably they're very interesting. I don't know whether they're safe when you feel like you're getting massaged and you're driving along.
I don't particularly like them, but that's because I see them as a distraction.
Yes, I would
agree.
But
that's just totally
maybe
personal.
For the passenger seats, they could limit them. But the front seats of these cars will always have these features that were like massaging seats in both of the seats. They won't go back to the back seats in most of them. But let's go through the rest of the
no,
things.
Well,
more
no, we
power.
We are running out of time, Mr. Robin.
What?
We are running out of time.
Okay.
We have run out of time.
30 seconds?
30 seconds, that's it.
More power, real vents. I don't know what that means, window vents or not. Amber turn signals, more storage up front, and a bigger screen and rotary dials. These are all internal. Some of them are external, and we can go into them in the future show. So until next week, listeners, it's Car Keys with Jay, Mike, and Robin.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.